Okay, we're picking up here on the top of Tet Vav and Aleph, 11 lines down. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Malachi ze Mordechai. Malachi and Mordechai are synonymous. The Navi Malachi, Mordechai that's found in Megillat Esther. Lamani Krashmo Malachi. So then, if his name is Mordechai, why is he called Malachi? Shea Mishne Lamelech, because he was the viceroy to the king. Malach or Melech, he was like a Malach. He had power. He was within the political echelons of Shushan, of the kingdom of Achashverosh. Meitavei, is that really true? Baruch ben Neriah, Usraya ben Machseah, who we mentioned yesterday, both as being Talmidim of Yirmiyahu Navi, and individuals who are Kohanim, Nevi'im, and descendants of Rachav HaZonah. V'Daniel, Umordechai Bilshan, which is Mordechai with the addition of the Bilshan, which some associate with the word Lashon, because he was a member of the Sanhedrin and knew the 70 Lishonot. V'Chagai, Zachariah, Umalachi, were all contemporaries in terms of their Nivuah, Daniel, Chagai, Zachariah, Umalachi. And now we have Mordechai, and then two of Yirmiyahu's Talmidim thrown in there. Kulan Nitnabnu, Bishnat, Shtaim, LeDaryavish. They all prophesied in the second year of Daryavish HaSheni, which according to Chazal is the son of Esther and Achashverosh, who permits the building of the Beit HaMikdash 18-19 years after Koresh allowed the return of the Jews to Zion, but then halted the building of the Beit HaMikdash. So Daryavish HaSheni, in the third year of his reign, allows them to return and start building the Mikdash. And here it's they all had prophecy at the same time. The question derives from the fact that Malachi and Mordechai are mentioned as separate individuals. And therefore, Tiyufta, that's a strong refutation of Rav Nachman's position. Tanya, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, Malachi ze Ezra. That the Malachi, the Navi, and Ezra found in the Ketuvim are synonymous. V'chachamim omrim Malachi Shemo. Chamim just say, Malachi is Malachi. He's just a Navi, and he's not anybody else. Amar Rav Nachman, Mistavra Kamand Amar, Malachi ze Ezra. Makes sense to associate Malachi with Ezra. Dichtiv b'Neviot Malachi, because it says in the prophecies of Malachi, Bagda Yehuda, Yehuda rebelled, B'toiva Nesta b'Israel, and an abomination was done in Israel, B'Yerushalayim, Ki Chilel Yehuda Kodesh Hashem, they profaned that which was holy to Hashem, Ubal Bat El Nechar, that they fell in love and married or consorted with the daughters of foreign gods, meaning that they married non-Jewish women. Uman Afrish Nashim Nachriot, who was the individual that led a revolution in order to have the Jewish people who were living in Eretz Yisrael at the time divorce, rid themselves of their foreign wives. Ezra, Dichtiv, because it says, Vayan Shchanya ben Yechiel mibnei Elam, Vayomer leEzra, Anachnu ma'alnu belukenu. We have wronged our God, Venoshev Nashim Nachriot, and we took foreign wives, and then they agree with the pressing of Ezra to rid themselves of these foreign wives and to do tshuva. So you see that Malachi's nivu'ah about foreign wives actually comes to fruition under the auspices of Ezra, and Ezra then works to undo or remove the problem of the foreign wives. Therefore, they associate the two of them together. Now, what's interesting over here in terms of associating different characters with individuals that we know, regards to Mordechai, that's because the name Mordechai, the Gemara already darshaned, means Mardechi, but the meaning, like that of Esther, which the Gemara already mentioned earlier, who is Ayelet HaShachar, Istahar, which is a Persian name, and it's one of the Persian gods. So too, Mordechai or Marmaduk is one of the Persian gods. So it's a non-Jewish name. And so the Chachamim might be trying to, over here, associate with Mordechai, who is an unknown figure and does not carry a Jewish name, trying to associate him with an individual who was much more prominent in terms of their nevuah and their connection to Hashem. And that way it elevates the stature or the status of Megillat Esther. And the same might be true of Ezra, because Ezra leads, as we know, a number of revolutions, including what the Gemara noted before about the switching the language and the font that was used for the Sefer Torah, as amongst other things. And Ezra was found in the Ketuvim. If the Gemara associates him with the Navi, then once again it elevates his status. It gives more tokef to that which he did and the revolutions that he led. Although, just in general, that Chazal have a principle of conservation of characters, which is that they try to combine or consolidate the number of individuals so that they are all one. And usually when they do that, it's not necessarily that they are synonymous or they're the same person. Many times they're trying to draw a parallel between these individuals, that they both did things that were significant. They led revolutions. They did something that was of a similar ilk. And therefore, Chazal associate the characters together. Now we'll see coming up in the Gemara again with regards to other individuals. Tanrabanan, arba nashim yififiot ayu ba'olam. There were four, what seems to be the most beautiful women in the world, and the Gemara enumerates them as Sarah, Rachav, Avigail, Esther, in chronological order. Tosafot right away asks, what about Chava? Because the Gemara in Baba Batra says that Sarah looked like a monkey next to Chava, so why isn't she mentioned? So Tosafot says, over here, it's only mentioned individuals who were born from human parents, not someone who was created by the hand of God. And therefore, Chava is not included in the list, even though she might have been more beautiful than all of these women. L'manda amar Esther yirachuroket aita. Like we saw previously, there is an opinion that Esther was jaundice, that she was discolored. Mepik Esther umayel Vashti. They take out Esther and they put back in Vashti instead, that Vashti was so beautiful and not Esther. Although, as we noted before, yirachuroket aita, and the Gemara is going to speak about this later on, possibility is that it wasn't her natural coloring or natural beauty, but rather it was a result of her fasting before she came into Achashverosh, and that's why she was yirachuroket, because she was famished, and she was gaunt going into Achashverosh after she had fasted for 3 days. Tarabanan, Rachav Bishma, someone who mentions the name of Rachav is impacted. Zinta, it kindles lust for znut inside of the individual. Yael Bikola, Yael does that with her voice. Avigail Bizchirata, Avigail just by remembering her. And Michal Bachul Biriata, by her sight. All of these women are very beautiful. They didn't all make the top four list, but nevertheless, these are women who were very attractive, and these are different means of attraction. And therefore, some of the poskim, like the Nodi Rehuda, point to these as being issues for Giroi, seduction or kindling lust, and therefore a person should be careful with regards to these issues with women. The Marsha does mention that there are hints at all of this in the Psukim, because it says with regards to Rachav, Ushma Rachav, that her name was Rachav, so it has a focus on her name. By Yael it says, Vatomer Lav Sura Aduni, she seduces Sisra to come to her tent by speaking to him. So it's her voice that was the attraction. Abigail, it says, V'zacharta et amatecha. We saw yesterday that she encourages David to remember her. That's the zikaron. By Michal, it says, U'michal bachol nishkafa ba'ad achalon. She was looking out or watching from the window. So again, her sight or seeing her was something that was attractive. So these are hinted to it in the psukim, but might have broader application halakhically in terms of being careful not to be entrapped or captured by the seductions that could be problematic. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Kolomer Rachav, Rachav, Miyad Nikri. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, anybody who says Rachav's name twice immediately has a seminal omission. So Amar Rav Nachman, Ana Amina Rachav, Rachav, Velo Ichbatli. I did that, and it had no impact on me. Amar Lei, as we saw back in the Gemara in Tanit, in Dav Hei, when it mentioned this Gemara, Ki Gamina Biodat Umakira. That's when you know her and are familiar with her. Rashi says that knowing her and being familiar with her are just synonymous, that you actually have seen her, you've seen her beauty. Whereas Tosafot takes it much more literally and says Yoda means that person who had intercourse with her, Umakira, and is familiar with her, means someone who's experienced her will have this effect. And therefore, obviously, it does not have effect on Rav Nachman, because he never had met her. And obviously, Rav Yitzchak must have also had it, Bimisora, because he didn't know Rachav either. And therefore, he couldn't definitively say that that was the case. And number two is he wouldn't be permitted to do it because it would have caused a seminal omission. So it must have been something they had been mistora. And therefore, it doesn't have any impact on him or on Rav Nachman because they didn't know her. They were just passing on the tremendous draw and seduction of Rachav HaZonah. Mordechai yadad kol asher nasa. And then it's like dot, 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 because the Megillah continues. And that's now what the question the Gemara is going to deal with. What is this? What did he say? Rav Amar Gava Haman Me'Achashverosh. That Haman now has exceeded Achashverosh, meaning that Achashverosh was limited in what he wanted to do to the Jews, or what he would have done to the Jews. Now Haman is taken over, and now things are going to be much worse, because Haman is now taking the plans of Achashverosh, or even exceeding what Achashverosh wanted to do, and that's really bad for the Jews with when Haman's in charge. Shmuel Amar, Gavar Malka Ilo, Mimakal Tata, that the king above has now exceeded the king below. Rashi says it's a Lashon Sagi Nohor, which is that it's euphemistic, meaning the other way around, that the king down below now has been given rights to act without the intercession of the king above. It is now clear that Mishnah Shemaim, they're not going to interfere that this gezeirah is going to be carried out against the Jews. And somewhat hinted in the pasuk is the fact that Mordechai yada, he knew something that not anybody else knew because the information was public about the gezeirah. And so what Rashi says in the Megillah is that he knew that min hashamayim, they agreed to this gezeirah, that they were on board for this gezeirah, which meant that it was very bad, and that's probably why Rashi got it from the statements that were made here by Rav and Shmuel. Mir Dvaj has a nice idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in Moed Katan, we'll see, me, Moshel B, who rules over me, who is able to change my mind about gezeirot, is the tzaddik, which means normally that tata, those down below, are able to influence that which goes on above. And when Mordechai says the opposite, that Ila'a, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's gezeirah is in place above the tata'a, means that tzaddikim no longer have the ability to influence. That means that his ability to daven and change the outcome had been taken away. And that's why he was calling out, Vayizak zaka gdola umara. It was bitter because he realized that this was a gzera min hashamayim that wouldn't necessarily become overcome. And in that way, you could read the statement not as a lashon saginor euphemistically, but rather just literally that the malka yiloh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was no longer going to be influenced by malka toa, by the tzaddikim. Batit chalchal ha-malka. Esther was very disturbed, afraid. My betit chalchal. Seems to me that the Gemara is focused both on the word itself, but also on the duplication. It could have just said betit chal, and that would have been sufficient. The fact that it says betit chalchal sounds like there's some sort of extreme type of fear or discomfort or disturbance that Esther has from the news that she receives. Amarav shepirsa nida, that she had a menstrual sighting. Rav Yirmi Amar shehutzrucha l'nekevah, that she had an urge to relieve herself. It might be, it's known that medically when someone faces something that's very traumatic or they have tremendous fear, that they sometimes lose control over their bodily functions. That may mean what means hutzracha l'nekaveha, or possibly pirsa nida, although the Gemara in Nida in the first parak discusses the fact that a woman who's in fear might be misuleket damim, and have just the opposite, machloket there of the tanaim, but maybe they're associated. The Maharal has a nice thought over here, which is that pirsa nida and hutzracha l'nekaveha, which is a sign of tum'ah, and therefore that the kochota tum'ah, or the evil people, were now becoming ascendant over Klal Yisrael, and this was a hint to her that this was taking place, and it was very serious. It might also relate to the distinction between whether the sin was a spiritual sin, which is the tumah that's associated with pirsa nida, or was it a sin of physical or pleasure that was the undoing of Klal Yisrael at this time, and that's shehutzrucha l'nekaveha, that she had to relieve herself some physical bodily function. So it might be that it's hinting at maybe what was the reason for the problem, whether it was a spiritual reason or more of a physical reason. But tikra Esther lahatach, Esther calls hatach, amarav hatach ze Daniel, that hatach is synonymous with Daniel. The lamanikro shmo hatach, shechatchua migdulato, because they cut him down from his position of power or his authority. Shmo lamar shekol divrei amachut nechtachin al piv, anything that the king did was done by his consultation. So we'll reread one little piece here, and then we'll come back and explain this. The dat mazeh val mazeh. She wanted to know about this and about that. So the duplication again of the language troubles Chazal, and they say, "Amar Rav Yitzchak shachalo shema avru Yisrael achamisha chumshei Torah." Sends hatach to Mordechai to find out what's going on, and she says, "The dat mazeh val mazeh." That is a reference to the chamisha chumshei Torah tichtiv behen by the luchot. It's written mizeh mizeh him ktuvim. So therefore, the aseret debrot are a tamtzit, concentration of the entire Torah, and therefore she was suggesting that maybe there was a violation of the Torah by Klal Yisrael, and that's what the issue was. This, according to the Marshal, is the evidence of the fact that Hatach was Daniel, and that is because, based on the fact that she sent him with this message, means that he was Jewish, who was one of the Sarisei HaMelech, and we don't find anyone else who's called a Saris HaMelech, or a Jewish individual that's called Saris HaMelech, besides from Daniel. And so the only two Jews in the Persian-Median Empire that have the status of Tzvisa Melech was Daniel and Hatach. And if you assume that Hatach was someone who was on the inside, meaning that he was Jewish and he understood what Esther was sending to Mordechai in these hints, or because he was trustworthy to Esther and Mordechai, which indicates that he was an insider or Jewish, then Hatach would be then synonymous with Daniel. That's how the Marsha sees the impetus for what the Gemara is saying, that they were the same individual. And again, it might also have to do with the personalities and where we find Hatach and Daniel acting in these situations that there is a lot of similarity or commonality between them that might indicate that they are the same person, not literally, but the same person in terms of what they do, how they act, and their interactions. Now, in terms of why was Daniel called Chatach, Shradchua Migdulato, Rashi over here says because he served under the administrations of Belshazzar, Koresh, and Daryavish, and then he was deposed by Achashverosh. So that was the change that Daniel, who until this point was influential over the Persian kings, lost that influence, and that allows the opening for Haman to come in. But though the Marsha says that it's more logical to say that he was deposed from the time of Nebuchadnezzar into the time of Belshazzar, because he was elevated by Nebuchadnezzar to be a significant player in the Malchut, and Belshazzar only puts him over a smaller area or region that he was in charge of. Therefore, he was already deposed at that point in time. And the Meshech Chochmah has an interesting statement over here as to why Daniel lost his standing, is because Daniel was unique in the fact that he was Moser Nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu when they put him into the Gov HaRayot, when they put him into the lion's den, as we're going to speak about later in today's daf. But once it came to the miracle of Purim, where all of Klal Yisrael were Moser Nefesh, in order to be saved from the decree of Haman, then Daniel was no longer unique or special, and that's what causes the diminution in position, because he was no longer so unique. Then it says, Vayigidu leMordechai divrei Esther. Esther does not really accept Mordechai's suggestion that she should go in and speak with the king, because it's too risky. And then it seems that the information gets back to Mordechai, but it says, Vayigidu leMordechai. In plural, it says that it came, he was told it. If Chatach went back, it should have said that Vayigid the Mordechai divrei Esther, or that Hatach went back, that's not mentioned there. The Gemara learns from this, ve'ilu ihu lo'aza legabe, that Hatach himself didn't go, mikan she'im yeshivim al kalkala. From this you learn that you don't bring back, you can say more generically, bad news, or, in this instance also, the rejection of the suggestion of the individual. You don't want to be the bearer of bad news, especially if you were the messenger that brought the information one way. You don't want to go back with the bad news. Let somebody else do that, or let the information seep out to that individual. You shouldn't be the one who brings back the rejection or the bad news. Lech nos et kol ha-yudim, so Esther says to Mordechai, go and gather together all Yudim. Ad asher lo kedat, that statement of Esther, until it finishes her statement where she says she's going to enter into Achashverosh against the normal etiquette. Amar Rabbi Abba, shelo kedat haya. It's not going to be the way that it normally is. It's going to breach the normal protocols. Until this point in time, she was under duress when she went to Achashverosh. She didn't go willingly. She was taken. And when he asked for her, that wasn't her choice anymore. Bachshav, she's presenting herself biratzon willingly. Because she'avadati, avadati. And therefore, the way I was lost, I will be lost. Kishem she'avadati mibeit haba. Just like I was taken forcefully from my father's house, or from my nation, or from where I was beforehand, to be in the palace with Achashverosh. Kach uvad mimicha. At this point now, I'm going to be lost from you. And as Rashi explains over here, this is based on the Agadah we saw before, that Esther was married to Mordechai, and she was only together with Achashverosh under duress, and then she returned to Mordechai. But now she's a willing mizana. She engages in adultery willingly, then she can no longer return to her husband. And this presenting herself in a willing manner before Achashverosh will now preclude her from returning to Mordechai. What's interesting over here, again, is that Tosafot takes it very literally. He says, Vim Tomar, my lo hayah megarsha. Why didn't Mordechai just divorce her to avoid this problem? So Tosafot over here says, because it would have been a big public incident, because you have to do it in front of two edim. The whole point of doing something in front of two edim is so that it is publicized. But Yahavireh, penit parsim hadavar lemachut. Maybe that the king would find out about it, and therefore he wanted to keep it under wraps. Although the Rashba questions what type of publicity is involved in having two edim, especially according to those that suggest that you can divorce either Bektav Yodo, at least Min HaTorah, or according to the Rif, you can even do it Ben Ola Ben Atzma, you can have a private divorce. You don't need a dim for a divorce, at least Min HaTorah. And many of the Achronim tried to figure out what exactly was the issue over here. What's more interesting is that even if she was divorced and she willingly had Biyah with Achashverosh, then she couldn't return to her husband because of the fact that once a woman has gone to another party after the divorce, she can't return to her husband. The answer to that might be that's only in wedlock, meaning that only if she gets married and has relations with another individual in that wedlock is she restricted from returning to her original husband. But if it's done derech znut outside of the framework of marriage, Maybe there she should be able to return to her husband and not have the problem of machzir gzushato after she has been together with someone else. And some of the achronim tried to suggest that the problem wasn't the divorce, but rather the remarrying of Esther afterwards. Because if she had to wait till Ahasuerus died, that would have been a very long time. So he'd want to remarry her after she went willingly. He'd remarry her right away because the rest would be be'ones, and then they would have re-engaged in their relationship. And that would have been something that requires publicity because one has to get married with Edim. But either way, it's interesting that Tosafot again takes it very literally and therefore is questioning how it could be or why was it that Mordechai didn't do or didn't give a get. And that also supposes that the Biyah with Ahasuerosh is a problem of Arayot and therefore would make her Asur al Ba'ala, which goes against the view of the Rabbeinu Tam, who views that Biyah with a Goy is like Biyat Be'ema, and therefore does not Oser her al Ba'ala, which the Rivam disagrees with. Over here, this is evidence of the fact that it seems that Biyat Goy would be Oser her al Ba'ala, and not like the position of the Rabbeinu Tam. This incident also has ramifications, the Halacha, where there's Machloket in the Poskim, how to understand what exactly was happening here with Esther. The Notable Yehuda speaks about a very difficult case where there were a group of marauders that took over this group or captured this group of Jews and they were going to kill them all. And then one of the women said that I'm going to go to try and consort with the leader of the group. And if I have Bia or relations with him, maybe he'll release the group. And that's what happened. She seduces him and he sleeps with her and then they release the group. And the question was regards to whether her behavior was correct and whether she was permitted to go back to her husband. And so the Notei Yehuda quotes from the Tshuvot Beit Yaakov that says that with regards to this incident, the woman did the right thing. She saved all these lives. It was the right thing to do. But nevertheless, she still is Asura Lebala. She can't return to her husband. And his evidence is from our Gemara here, by Esther, where she went to do this, Hatzalat, to save people's lives. Nevertheless, she was still Asura to return to Mordechai. And therefore, he compliments the woman and her sacrifice. But in the end, she can't go back to her Bala. The Notei Yehuda disagrees. It says that with regards to this matter, it's a Yehereg Bial Ya'avor, that this woman has to give up her life and not consort with the leader of the group. And that's because when do we say a woman is Karka Olam, that she's a passive participant in Biyah? That's when she's Nenas, when she's raped, when she's not a willing participant. But over here, where she's being Mishtadelet, she's trying to seduce him, she's active in the engagement with this individual, that's something that's inappropriate. And everybody says that she should not have done this. She should not have acted in this way and rather let them lose their lives. And of course, she would be Asura the Ba'ala. What about the evidence from our case over here where Esther goes to Ahasuerosh? So he says that you can't bring a proof from that because either Esther was Hatzalat Kol Klal Yisrael, and that's exceptional and you can't extrapolate from that, or she had the ear of Mordechai in the Beit Din, and they told her that this was the right thing to do. So she had a Psak Halacha from the Beit Din, or maybe even a instruction through the Nevi'im to engage in this activity. And therefore, she had a unique case, which you can't extrapolate to other halachot. But you see, many of the poskim try to use this as a basis for determining what the halacha would be or appropriate behavior would be for individuals found in difficult circumstances. Vayavor Mordechai. So after receiving that message from Esther, the parak ends with Vayavor Mordechai Vayas Kol Asher Tzivta Alav Esther, that he does everything that Esther asked him to do. And what does it mean, vayavor, that he crossed? Amarav shevir yom rishon shel Pesach v'ta'anit, that he caused the first day of Pesach to be overridden, because as Rashi notes over here, the decree went out on the 13th of Nisan, the information got out on the next day, and therefore they fasted Yudalit Tetvav and Tetzayin, and on the night of Tetzayin, that's when Esther approaches Ahasuerosh, and therefore the fast day crossed over Pesach, that's vayavor, means they overrode Pesach in that year, because of the danger, because of the sakanat nefashot, Shmuel Amar, davar arkuma demayo. They crossed over what seems to be like a pool of water or a puddle of water. Some suggest that that is the body of water between the capital, the political capital, Shushan, and the city itself of Shushan, that Mordechai, who had been up in the royal part of the city, then crossed back into the regular part of the city. It's to indicate either how involved Mordechai was in trying to bring the people together to do tshuva, or maybe even that it's a small act, and the Gemara's emphasis is that even small acts that are done, l'shem shamayim, are recorded and are meaningful. V'hi b'yom ha'shlishi, v'atu bash Esther machut, as again we saw yesterday, it was on the third day that Esther wore royalty, bigdei machut mi ba'ile, should say that she wore clothing of royalty, not royalty, So that she was enveloped with a Holy Spirit. And we learn this from the fact that it says here, Esther Malchut, and it says, by the men of David, Ruach Labshat Amasai. It's not clear that when it says Ruach Labshat Amasai, that it was actually Ruach HaKodesh. Rashi over there claims that it was just the fact that he had the gumption to speak in front of the whole group at that point in time. There are also other vorts and divrei Torah that are said about Tuvash Esther Machot. Wrote an article with regards to Purim about the shift in Esther between the beginning of the Megillah and later Megillah, and this being a transformational moment when she Tuvash Esther Machot, she then takes on or acts like royalty. And now we have a number of memrot from Amar Rabbi Lazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Leolam, Altihi Birkat Hedyot Kala Be'enecha, that a bracha of a hedyot, of a lay person, should not be dismissed in your eyes. You should not consider it to be nothing. Sharei Shnei Gdolei Ador, Baruchum Shnei Hedyotot. Two of the greatest leaders were blessed by two lay people, Nitkaima Behen, and the blessing came true. Ve'eluhein, David, V'Daniel, David HaMelech, and Daniel, David DeBarchei Aravna, that Aravna gives a bracha to David HaMelech when he's buying field of Aravna Yevusi to build the Beit HaMikdash, and over there he offers him everything, and he says, Ve'yom Aravna El HaMelech, now they don't quote you the remainder of the Pasuk, which is the important part of the Pasuk, which is the bracha itself, which is, Hashem Elokecha Yirtzecha, that Hashem should receive or be pleased with what you do, and that's what happened. Akash Baruch Hu accepts that this becomes the location for the Beit HaMikdash. Daniel de Berchei Daryovish. Daniel was blessed by Daryovish because when he violates the decree of Daryovish, which was pressed by the nobles that wanted to get rid of Daniel, that you weren't allowed to worship or daven to any other god, and Daniel violates that and davens to Akash Baruch Hu, and therefore Daryovish is compelled to follow through with his decree and throw Daniel into the lion's den against his will or against his best judgment. And Daryavish, who is favorably inclined towards Daniel, says to him beforehand, Dichtiv, Elokach, Dian, Palach, Le, Betadira, God that you normally worship, Hu Yishez Vinach. He should save you. He should send his salvation to you. And that's sure enough what happened. He was saved from the lion's den. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Chanina, Alti Kila Tejot, Kala, Be'enecha. Now on the opposite side, the curse of a lay person, you should not dismiss. The curse of a lay person. Over here, a lay person may not necessarily mean a lay person versus someone of importance, but it just means in relative stature, in between someone who is of a higher standing and someone who is of a lower standing, that one should not dismiss the bracha or the klala of the person of lower standing. You could say over here that all the individuals that are mentioned in these memorot of Rav Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, are non-Jews, and therefore that's why he has to make the statement about hedyotot. But with regards to Jews, everybody's bracha and klala would be significant. Or maybe this even has application by lay people or someone who's a lower stature, even if they were Jewish. They bring evidence of the fact that you should not take it lightly. Shar Vimelech kilelet Sarah. Vimelech cursed Sarah. Yineulach kitsute naim. That the monies and the materials that he gives to Avram after he's punished for taking Sarah, and he gets upset at Avram for not telling him that Sarah was his wife, and Sarah did not indicate that either. He says this will be a kitsute naim. The way Rashi reads it is that this will prove to everybody that you can leave with a head held high because I had to pay you, and therefore I wasn't just throwing you out or using you, and you can walk out and say that he didn't do anything to me because he had to pay to get out of this situation, and therefore it's even more extreme according to that view of Rashi because he didn't even mean it as a curse. He was saying it that it should be Ksute Naim, but since he mentioned Ksute Naim, it turned out to be a Klala, as we'll see in a second. By the way, the Ramban explains it that people will hide themselves from you or back away from you because they're afraid to engage with you, which again would not be a curse. Whereas the Gemara is looking at the Pashtu, the Pasuk, and saying, Ve'yonach kesute naim, that he was actually saying, because you hid this from me and left me with my eyes closed and I got punished for that, then this is kesute naim. You should also have that your eyes shall be closed or covered up. And that nikaim mizaran, that actually happens in her offspring, that when Yitzchak gets old, his eyes dim. And you see here, this kilalat hedyot, especially according to Rashi and the Ramban, there's no klala here. Nevertheless, it's interpreted as a klala, that people's statements have meaning and have bearing. So again, a member from them, not necessarily associated with the Megillah, Bo rei shalok midat HaKadosh Baruch Hu midat basar v'dam. God is different than man. Midat basar v'dam shofet k'teira v'achakach noten l'toch ha'mayim. First he gets a pot, and then he puts water in the pot to put it on the stove. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu noten mayim. God puts water first, v'achakach shofet ha'teira, and then he puts together the pot that's going to hold the waters. Kayem mishneemar, the interpretation of the pasuk, l'kol tito hamon mayim, from the great thundering sound of him placing the waters in the heavens, bashamayim, and then only afterwards does he make the shamayim. So he put the water there first, and then only afterwards the shamayim. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Chanina, again from these same individuals, another memra, kol omer davar b'shem omro mevi geula le'olam. Anyone who says something over in the name of the person that gave them the idea or was the one who gave them the information, they bring redemption to the world. That Esther, when she told about the plot of Bigdan B'Teresh that Mordechai had unveiled, she says in the name of Mordechai, and that's what leads to the Gula later on. When he's reading the Sefer Zichronot, he sees that Mordechai helped him out, and what can we do to repay that to Mordechai? That's the turning point in the Megillah. And the importance of saying B'Shem Omro, Mevi Gula Le'olam, is because Kadosh Baruch Hu always wants us to recognize that it's really God's intervention and God's doing that brings the salvation. So the individuals involved in the salvation, if they think it's themselves, it's problematic. The fact that Esther realized that it wasn't her and that she gave credit to Mordechai, is there any indication that she realizes it's not about her, it's about Kadosh Baruch Hu and about what others are doing, and therefore she's the right person to have the Gula Ba'al Yada. Tzadik avad ledoro avad. When a tzadik is lost, he's really lost to his generation. Mashal le'adam, it's similar to a person, shabdalo margalit, he lost a precious stone. Komakom shehi margalit shema. Wherever the precious stone is still a precious stone, and it's still valuable. Lo'avda le'ba'ala. But it's only lost to its owner because he can't find it, or he can't be reconnected with his precious stone. And similar to with regards to a tzaddik. The tzaddik will remain a tzaddik. He will have the rewards of a tzaddik. The loss of the tzaddik is really felt by the generation in which he lived, because they're the ones who are now have to deal without having him there, or not having the benefit of having the tzaddik. But the tzaddik himself, like the precious stone, will remain a precious stone, or remain a tzaddik. Now, you go back to the Megillah, but the same individuals that are darshaning, that none of this is worthwhile to me. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, this is Haman speaking after he has everything going in his favor, but yet when he walks past Mordechai and he doesn't bow down, it ruins everything for him. When he sees him sitting in the gate of the king's palace, Amar Kozeno Shoveli, none of this is worth anything to me because of him. Kedrav Chista, why is it not worth anything to him? Because of this, Amar Rabbi Chista, Amar Rabbi Chista, Zebab Puzboli, Zebab Puzbuti. This one comes with his contract. This one comes with his contract. The word prusbuti and prusbuli, as Rashi points out, buti is from the word wealthy or someone who has, and buti is from someone who is lacking, like havet tavitenu de machzero. The Gemara in Gitin actually uses this to explain what's the meaning of a prusbol, which is that it's a document or a takana for the rich and the poor. It's to facilitate lending to the poor, and to facilitate the ability for the rich to be repaid their loans. And that's what the purpose of a prusbol is. So here you have a prusbuti and a prusbuli, the rich and the poor. And that's a reference to Amar Papa, but Karile Avda de Mizdaben Betalmai. It's a reference to the Gemara coming up in tomorrow's daf, that there was prior interactions between Mordechai and Haman. In those prior interactions, Haman came out on the lower end, that he had fallen on hard times, didn't have the means by which to support himself. Therefore he sells himself as a slave to Mordechai. And that means that whatever Haman owns is going to go to his master, Mordechai. That's what's making Haman so upset, and he wants to get rid of Mordechai so that he can rid himself of this obligation or this encumbrance to Mordechai. And that's what it is. Each one of them is coming with their document. One's coming to Puzbuli, coming with his wealthy document, the one who owns the slave. The other one's coming to Puzbuti, coming with his document that he is enslaved. And that's the Gemara's hint to this idea that there was this prior relationship between them, and that relationship is undermining everything that Haman's doing because Mordechai still has the upper hand on him. And like the Gemara does in many places, it sees the word zeh as being something that you can tangibly point to or you can see, and it says the same thing over here. That all of his wealth, everything that he had, was imprinted on his heart, was with him. And we see Mordechai sitting in the gateway to the king's palace, Amar Kol Zeh, pointing to that which is on his heart, and then Tovel Li, it's not worth anything to me. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, same pair again. Atid HaKadosh Baruch Hu Liot Atara Barosh Kol Tzadik V'Tzadik. Future HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be a crown on the heads of every righteous individual. Shenamar, so they quote the pasuk from Yishayahu, which is the Haftorah for Parshat Shmot. Yomu Yashem Espakot Bateret Tzvi Ulzfirat Tifara L'Sha'aramo Uluruach Mishpat Yosheva HaMishpat, Ligvura Mishivei Milchama Shara. And then it continues, V'gam Eile B'Yayin Shagu, Sheikhar Ta'u, Kohen B'Navi Shagu B'Sheikhar Nivlu Min HaYayin, Ta'u Min HaSheikhar Shagu B'Ro'eh Paku Pliliya. And then it ends with the pasuk that's found in Pirkei Avot, Kiko Shokhonot Maluki, Tzoa B'Li Makom. The translation is, on that day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will become like a crown of beauty and a diadem of glory on the remnant of his people, and a spirit of judgment for him who sits in judgment, and of valor for those who repel attacks at the gate. But those that are muddled in wine, or reeling from wine, and dazed, or staggering from intoxicating beverages, they will stumble in judgment. Now the Gemara is going to interpret that pasuk. Maila teretzvi, ulitzvira tifara. What's the meaning of this pasuk, which is, for a teretzvi, a crown of glory, tzvira tifara, a diadem of beauty, lo sim tzivyono, the word tzvi means tzivyono, those that do his bidding or do his will, and it'll be a diadem for those that are mitzapim, tifarto, that await his glory. Yocholakol, you think this have application to everyone, tamalomar, l'shar amo, that only to the residual of his people. Kol, mi she'osim atzmo kishirayim. Anybody makes himself like residue or like a leftover, meaning that he doesn't hold himself in high esteem, but is humble and submissive before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're the ones who will be benefiting from waiting to see the glory of God and doing the will of God. Now the Gemara continues to darshan the pasuk. Uluruach mishpat. It'll be for the sheramol, for those that are shirayim, as well as lo shev mishpat, luruach mishpat, zedanet yitzro. That's someone who judges his yetzer, as Rashi says over here, kofeu lashuv b'tshuva. He compels his yetzer to do tshuva. Ulo shev al hamishpat. One who sits in judgment, zedan din emet lamito. This is someone who comes to a proper conclusion, takes the case, and adjudicates it to its true conclusion. And the Tosafot points out over here, because if you don't do it carefully, and you're not meticulous about taking care of the din, then there could be a din mirumeh. You can, even though you're doing the din till its end, you might not get to the wrong conclusion, because there are people who are cheating, cunning, and deceiving, and therefore you have to didan din yemet. Le'amito, get to the bottom of it, get to the truth, get to the right conclusion. Uligvura. Zem mitkaber al Yitzro. This is someone who overcomes his Yetzer, doesn't follow his Yetzer to do Averot, but rather is able to overcome it. Mishivei milchama, those that turn back the battle, the shara, to the gate. That refers to Elu shenosim notnim b'milcham tashel Torah, those that are engaged in the battle of Torah, learning Torah. Shara, at the gate, Elu tamidei chachamim, shemashkimim umarivim bebate knesiot ubate midrashot. They get up early and leave late from the shuls and from the Bate Midrash, and they're like shoarim. They're like gatekeepers, because they open the gates in the morning, they close the gates at night. Similar question that the Malachi Asherit asked when Bnei Yisrael are standing at the Yam Suf, and they ask, Lo karab zel zeh kol alayla, what's the difference between those that are facing annihilation and those that are the pursuers over here? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to defend Bnei Yisrael, because they are halalu obdei avodah zarah v'halalu obdei avodah zarah. They're both obdei avodah zarah. And a similar claim is made here with regards to the story of Purim. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yisrael osku b'torah, umot olam lo osku b'torah. Bnei Yisrael engaged in Torah learning, umot olam didn't. And so that's how they're differentiated. Amar lei. So the Midrash Din says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Gam ele b'yayin shagu, u'b'sheikhar ta'u. These also were reeling from wine and are staggering from intoxication. They're no different than the Umot Olam, because they also were drinking and engaged in the same activities as the other nations. And therefore, and then it goes, it goes to the end of the pasuk, paku pliliya, that they stumbled in judgment. What the Midrash Din is saying is, that not all of Klal Yisrael engaged in Torah. The majority of the Klal Yisrael are engaged in the same activities as the rest of the other nations. And those that are engaged in Torah are culpable because of a revut. Or it could be the other way around, in that not everybody is involved in Torah. Even those that are involved in Torah, they also, b'yayin shagu b'sheikhar ta'u, and therefore they're not deserving of salvation. So they're going to stumble in judgment. And ain paku ela gehinom. Paku is reference to gehinom shenamar from the pasuk that we quoted yesterday from Abigail. Dele zot lo lecha lepuka. This should not be a stumbling block for you. And she's saying that David consorting with her would have been a stumbling block, and the way Chazal learned it, it would have landed him in gehinom. Vein plilia ela dayanim. And plilia is judgment or judges shenamar natan beliflilim. That you have to pay based on what the judges determine. And so, therefore, you will stumble into Gehinnom from the judgment because of the fact that you acted no different than the other nations. And this seems to be an indictment of Klal Yisrael at the time of Mordechai and Esther, who are assimilated and joining the Suda of Oto Rasha. And therefore, the Midat HaDin points out, I don't know why there's any need or why they're deserving of salvation. And it seems to me that Hashem has no response to that. The Talmud, Bechatzar Beit HaMelech HaPnimit, says that Esther reaches the inner chamber of the king's courtyard. Merlevi, given she gala Beit HaTzlamim, once she reached the area of the idols, Nistakai Men HaShchinah, not unexpectedly, the Shechinah leaves her. Amra, and then she says, based on the Perek Tehillim of Lamatzeach, Ayelet HaShachar, which you saw in the Gemara in Yoma, is a reference to Esther, who is like the Ayelet HaShachar, and is also known as Istar, which is the morning star. Keli, Keli, Lama Zavtani, God, why have you left me? Shema Tadan al Shugei Kemezid. Maybe you consider someone who does something accidentally, like they do it intentionally. Valones Kiratzon, or someone who is compelled, like someone does it willingly. This is a reference to the fact that she has to now go and submit herself to Achashverosh. And she's saying, I'm not doing this willingly. I'm doing this because I need to save Klal Yisrael. And you're judging me as Ones Keratzon. When I'm compelled, you make it as if I'm doing this willingly. That's how Rashi explains it, although it's a little difficult because the Gemara before said she would be a surah lebala. That goes back to the discussion before about whether a woman's allowed to do such a thing, even though it's going to make her a surah lebala, even though she's doing it willingly, knowing that it's going to make her a surah lebala. And therefore, she might still be considered an ones, not a ratzon. Shogeg Mezid, the Marsha suggests, might reference to Bigdan and Teresh, that she revealed the plot to kill the king, and maybe that was a mistake. She maybe accidentally kept the king alive, who then promoted Haman and caused the problem. And you're judging me, someone who did something unintentionally thought saving the king was the right thing to do, Kemezid, like someone who did it intentionally. Or, Shema, you left me, because I was a karativ kelev, because I called him a dog. It's not clear who it's referencing to here, Shinemar. Hatzila, quoting from the same Perek in Tehillim, Hatzila Micherev Nafshi Miad Kelev Yechidati, to deliver my nefesh from the sword, and the one who is special or unique to me should save me from the hands of the dog, Bikurato Aryeh. And then she changes her tune and calls him a lion, Shinemar, Hosheini Mipi Aryeh, save me from the mouth of the lion. So either at first she called Haman a Kelev and said, save me from the Kelev Haman, and the reason she didn't get a response was because it's not only about Haman, it's about Achashverosh. Achashverosh is represented by the Aryeh, the lion, and therefore she needed to ask for salvation from the lion, not just from the Kelv, not just from Haman. Or it could be that she at first thought that Haman was just the Kelv, and that was sufficient to ask for salvation from the Kelv. But it turns out that that denigration was something that maybe didn't grant her salvation, that she has to upgrade and say, save me from the mouth of the lion, meaning that Haman is a much greater problem or bigger issue, and therefore she has to change her tune. The king gets sight of the queen. Three angels entered with her at that time. One that raised her neck to make her more beautiful. One that gave her an appearance or a sense of grace. The one that pulled the scepter of the king to reach out to Esther. And now the Gemara asks, Vekama, how much did the scepter extend? It was originally 2 amot, Vemado al Shtemesre, and it grew to 12 in order to allow for Esther to enter, meaning to grant her permission to come in. Ramila Sheshesre, some say 16. Ramila al Shisrim Ba'arba, some say 24. Vamanita Tana al Shishim. In a Braita, we have it that was 60 amot, and all this is an indication of how this was a miraculous event. She had been fasting for 3 days. Her appearance was, as we said before, gaunt and sunken face, maybe dark, or maybe even Yirak Roket. And therefore, she needed a Chut Shel Chesed, meaning that she knew that when she entered with 3 days of fasting, and so the rest of Klal Yisrael who fasted with her knew that when she was going in, it wasn't her beauty that was going to win, because it was about beauty. Fasting for 3 days is not the way to go about convincing the king to listen to you. And therefore, they would also know that the only way this is going to work is through beseeching Hashem. and through the munificence and beneficence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and they'll know that because her appearance was no longer something they could win. And that's what the Malach HaShareh going with there show that God is intervening. And this is really a nace, the ability of Esther to win the salvation of the Jews. Similar is the story with regards to the Agadato found in Sota Daf Yud Bet, with regards to Bat Paro reaching out to grab Moshe, and the Gemara there interprets it not that she sent one of her maidservants, but rather that her amata, her arm, extended. So too you find the same thing with the teeth of the Rishayim, Dichtiv. Again, in the Agadato, Shine Rishayim Shibarto, that you broke the teeth of the evil ones. Amresh Lakish, Altigre Shibarta, not that you broke them, Ela Sherivavta, that you extended them, had them grow out. And that's Rashi quotes over here, the story of Og Melech HaBashan, who was trying to destroy Bnei Israel, and he picks up a mountain, carries it over his head, in order to throw it on Bnei Israel. In the interim, the ants come and dig a hole in the mountain, and it causes it to collapse around his neck. So then he goes to pull it back off his neck, and his teeth grew out, and wedged it back on his head so he couldn't get the mountain back off of him. That's how Hashem punished or broke the Rishayim with their teeth growing. Similar to rodents who have continuously growing teeth unless they're sharpened and worn down. They will grow and inhibit their ability to do anything. And so do over here. His teeth grew out and then it inhibited his ability to remove the mountain. Rabba Baruchrana, Mar Mishum Rabbi Elazar, Shishama Mirabo, Rabo Mirabo. Heard from his Rebbe, Matayim. That it went 200 amot. And the Marsha, in all these cases, has explanations for how you find these numbers in the psukim. Vayomer la melech, malach Esther amalka, Esther at the Suda, he says to her, what do you want? Mabakashatech, what is your request? Ad chatzia malchut v'teas, until half of the kingdom, I will do anything that pleases you. Chatzia malchut, below kol amalchut. First of all, only half the kingdom, not the whole kingdom. Below davar shechutzeitz lemalchut. Not something that, either you can read this as divides the malchut, meaning that it's divisive, they will do something like that, or something that chutzeitz lemalchut sits in the center of the world or center of the malchut. Mainu, and what is that? Binyan Beit HaMikdash, the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. Either because it's something that sits at the center of the world, so that's the veiled references too, that you can't ask for that, or it's a reference to the fact that it was divisive, because the other nations were Katfu Sitna tried to stop the building of the Beit Mikdash, and Bnei Yisrael wanted to continue it, and it would cause divisiveness if he allowed that to happen, and that was not permitted. Okay, we're going to stop here, 18 lines from the bottom of Tedvav Amud Bet.